every second of your life when you're married, you have a chance to give yourself to serve another person.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Every Knee Shall Bow, your weekly Catholic podcast on evangelization and discipleship. My name is Mike Gomer Gormley, and today I am joined by Dave, the next Eminem Van Vickle. How you doing, Dave?
The next Eminem, like as in the rapper?
No, the candy.
Yeah, okay. All right, that's probably more.
Well, you got a hard shell, but inside you're full of chocolatey goodness.
Actually, it's really the opposite. I seem friendly on the outside because I've learned that. But yeah. So, anyways, no, I'm doing well. This is the first time ever that we've recorded where I've been like I just rolled out of bed.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I've never done that before. I mean, I'm normally up, 4:30, Spartan style, baby.
Are your kids in? Do you take a photo of your watch every morning before walk to your garage to work out or the Kleber Lang gym for men?
No, I don't want to lord it over somebody or something like that.
Fair enough.
I have nothing to show for it.
No, that's a good point. Are your kids on spring break or something?
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
Nice. We're doing spring break. We decided. So Shannon, I would describe her adherence to a weekly schedule as a homeschool family, as last year, as tentative at best, right? Like if she wasn't feeling it, she's like, nah, we're not doing it today.
Yeah, that's the best part about homeschooling.
Right. Yeah. But also can be the worst part about homeschooling.
Yeah, right.
So
right.
This year, let me rephrase that. This semester, since January, she's been like lockstep every day. You know, I'm helping out. I'm at home. We got this little rhythm flowing.
Yeah,
it's been great. No days off, nothing at all. And the kids got totally used to it too, because her whole goal was she wants to finish by like May 15th or whatever, Friday
is
there.
Okay, right.
She wants to finish by that time because my kids all have plays and stuff, the Shakespeare Festival. Oh, I have a funny announcement about that. And like, just be free, but her goal was to take 2 weeks off, the week of Holy Week and the week of Easter week. Mm-hmm. So right now we are almost done with week two of our Easter break, of our spring break, which is very sad for me because I kind of took off too. I scaled back my workload. Obviously, I'm still doing stuff like this,
but
it has been so nice. And with apologies to the church in North Carolina that I dropped the ball on, it has been a blessing for my family that I'm not immediately running out the door to do a Easter parish mission. Yeah, it's just been so nice being home.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, you know me. I'd have my kids with me every second if I could. Like I hate when they go back to school. But so this week has been like paradise. But yeah, so it's been really nice. I have been off. I have a talk coming up this week, but I've been off pretty much after working. Like I had like 16 nights in a row that almost killed me, and then
Right.
And then, yeah. So actually, you know what I'm speaking on this week? I'm kind of excited. It's part of a Eucharistic revival series, and I'm doing the Eucharist and spiritual warfare. And I'm really excited about it because I've dove into this, and man, it's really neat. Like the typology and stuff like that is really awesome.
Nice. Give us a little seasoning. Give us a little flavoring.
Actually, we've talked about this. We talked about this on the podcast. You know, the blessing of Melchizedek, right? That was a common blessing for a victory in battle, right? The bread and wine was a common blessing for a victory in battle. So I'm going to go deeply into that. And of course, like, you know, people like exorcists or like people who are in spiritual warfare love to throw out like three things the devil hates the most, right? Yeah. Like, but the theme that the devil hates the most, more than anything on earth, is the flesh of Jesus Christ. Like despises the incarnation, right? Like, so that is something that will constantly come across all the time, is like the flesh, to the point where, you know, one of the ancient exorcism rituals says, right, behold and tremble the body in which you inhabit at the sign of God it is, or something like that. I'm not quoting exactly, I don't have it in front of me, but that's like the point, is like flesh saves us, right? Like that great exchange saves us. So the Eucharist, right, would be flesh par excellence, right? Like the most perfect example of that doing. So anyways,
that's awesome.
I'm excited.
I just wrote a Marian. I'm writing my apologetics book and I'm focusing on Mary.
Yeah.
And I'm like defending the individual doctrines. Words are hard. I was defending the individual doctrines about Mary. But I wanted to write an intro to her where it's like Mary and Marian doctrines in light of the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Right.
And always keep it framed in there. And so I saw, like, for many people, they don't understand why Mary is so important. And it's like, if you get Mary wrong, you get Jesus wrong, because she safeguards and upholds what we believe about Jesus. So, for instance, think of all the Greco-Roman and Middle Eastern myths of gods interacting with humanity, especially male deities interacting with female humans.
Right.
And it's rape, it's violence, it's deception, you know, it's all of these things. It's rarely love, right? But it's always carnal. And so when we have the infancy narratives of Matthew and Luke, none of the carnality of the pagan deities is even remotely involved. And I say this because I'm trying to highlight the common Protestant myth that I heard when I was doing prison ministry. I heard this in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma all the time, which is Catholics, ever since Constantine took over the church, right? That's the falsified narrative that so many believe.
They love it.
They wanted to have their gods and goddesses, their pantheon. They just substituted with saints, and Mary being the chief goddess of worship and the queen of heaven. And that's a title in the Bible for the, you know, this horrible woman and all this stuff. So my goal is to show them how she is. Marian doctrine is anti-paganism, right? Because it's a direct contradiction to the entire real pagan world that, you know, we're murdering Christians.
So
like that's part of the idea. And then the other side of it is Mary is the anti-Gnostic, because it is of her flesh that the flesh of Christ comes into the world. So, I just think, like, Hans-Urs von Balthasar actually is the one that pointed this out to me, because we're friends. And
that's so the way you said that.
I did. I totally
it. It makes me so happy, because I feel that way about every author that I'm reading.
We're friends. We're chums. He loves me. When this whole thing blows over, we're going to get an apartment together. No, but he said he had this line where he was talking, he was refuting another Catholic theologian, Karl Rahner. And Karl Rahner has this interesting, weird theology that he ended up later in his life kind of repudiating about anonymous Christians. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I remember. Like, oh, yeah, sure.
Every atheist is an anonymous Christian.
It is ridiculous. Right.
Yeah, it is ridiculous, because it comes from his theology of, like, blessing and creation. And this is why in the Novus Ordo Mass, in the liturgy, especially for like weddings and funerals, there's almost no actual blessing of a thing. It's just invoking the blessing that already is.
That's already
the
is there. Right.
Yeah. And that's just so crappy. Like, there's like three prayers for blessing rings, and only one of them is actually blessing the rings. But because of Rahner had this, he was going to modernists in this one sense of like, oh, Jesus has the fullness of God consciousness, right? Yeah, and it's like, makes it sound like Jesus isn't God. Like, but what Rahner is trying to do, and obviously Rahner understands where the lines are for heresy and stuff, but he's trying to push the envelope for Jesus's humanity. Like, how united was the humanity of Jesus to the divinity? And then Balthasar basically refutes him by saying, what you're describing is not Jesus, it's Mary.
Yeah,
and when I heard that in class, I was like, oh my gosh, I love Mary more now. It was just so beautiful and perfect. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about the most famous Mary people ever. No. I totally butchered that.
I was like, did you change the topic on me all of a sudden?
What I meant to say was, in keeping with Mary, who is a famous Mary person, we're going to talk about the vocation of marriage, but my brain totally flipped it. I've been up since like 3:30, so you're gonna have to. I just woke up. Help me. I just woke up.
I'm particularly excited about this topic today. Even though, to be honest with you, marriage is my least favorite topic in the church. Like, I don't ever speak on it. I don't know why. I didn't like marriage and family in my classes. I didn't like any of like I don't know what it is. It doesn't as a topic of study, it does not interest me. But so I'm very excited. I'm very excited to talk about it because I've lately been giving this two-night parish mission where the first night I give my testimony and the next night I give my family testimony, which is hard to hear.
Yeah.
And I have really been delving into, like, I mean, the testing of vows, you know, like the where the rubber meets the road, like when things get hard, like that's, you know, that's when marriage is really tested. And so I'm excited to talk about this, you know, the sacrament of marriage. And
yeah, I want to talk about it just because I'm like a professional at it. I'm like so good. People come in
three you're so piece. Good at marriage.
I'm so good at marriage and family. People in three-piece suits sit on the ground Indian style and just listen to
yeah,
me.
Right.
Receive my wisdom.
I've stayed with you and I didn't catch that before with the
it's you know, it's subtle. It's there, but it's it's like it's more the context more than the content. Yeah, so these are the two sacraments that we're going to talk about in the next few episodes are the sacraments at the service of communion. So you got the sacraments of initiation, baptism, communion, confirmation. You have the sacraments of healing, which is confession and anointing of the sick. And now we're going into the sacraments at the service of communion. And it's important for us to understand because the first three is what is common to all of Christ's disciples, what we call the vocation of holiness and mission, right? So the first three sacraments of initiation is what makes us holy and draws us into the life of sanctification, union with Christ. It's about salvation. But marriage and holy orders, holy matrimony and holy orders, are directed towards the salvation of others. If they contribute, this is straight out of the catechism, if my marriage or the priesthood contributes to my personal salvation, it is through service to others that they do so. And in paragraph 1534, it says, they confer a particular mission in the church and serve to build up the people of God. So when you think about holy matrimony, your personal salvation is in and through your service to your spouse, to your kids, and to all those like that we extend the term family.
Yep, absolutely. And so one of the things I want to get across, like most importantly, is that is another aspect of the genius of the church, right? That you get to heaven by giving yourself, right? By serving, by like doing all the things that Christ did. And there's no better place to do that outside of like a vocation of service, a vocation of givenness, right? And that's what marriage and the priesthood would be, or religious life, right? That you are officially, through vows, giving yourself to another person, and that yes on your wedding day is a fiat. It's a forever yes until death do us part, right? And so it's an example of what I'm going to do every moment for the next however many years you get, right? And I think that that's a beautiful thing. I find after reflecting on my marriage, you know, which when you are married, I feel like really good partners probably reflect on it all the time, but I didn't think about it all the time. But now looking back, it's kind of like, man, like every moment is just a moment totally, completely pregnant with grace. Like every second of your life when you're married, you have a chance to give yourself to serve another person. Without oftentimes without any possibility of return on an earthly sense, right? And so this is why we want to get marriage right, because it's a treasure trove of graces, and also because it's the basis of all society.
Yeah, as the family yeah. goes, so goes civilization. Saint Pope John Paul II said that. And so when we do marriage prep at Saint Anthony's, when I used to be in charge of it, one of the reasons that I took over is because I found that it's not just about curriculums. There's a lot of great curriculums out there for yeah. marriage prep. And I do a lot of convalidation prep because through my inclusion program, there's a lot sure. of Protestants who needed to get convalidated. They were married to a Catholic or whatever. And so we worked on, I would say probably 100 marriages a year at our parish.
Wow. Okay. So that's okay.
Yeah. Like a lot.
You did a lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if I did two or three inclusion programs and adult confirmation, there's a lot of convalidations that needed to occur. And so I put together this program, and it was essentially, I went through the whole catechism where there was an article or a chapter on marriage, family, sexual intimacy, you know, things like that. Right. And I put them all, I aligned them all. So one is like part one is the marriage and spouses and family in God's plan. Like, what is marriage in God's plan? And then what is the family in God's plan? And then what is what is children, like honestly looking at it, and then sexuality. And then I talked a lot about the sacrament, sacramentality, and then the sacrament of holy matrimony. So it was kind of like getting this big picture, philosophical, theological view of marriage and family, and then drilling down to the sacrament and the reception of the sacrament. It's similar to what I do for confirmation, where it's like, this is the life of Christ in the church. This is the Holy Spirit, the mission of the Spirit. These are the gifts. These are the fruits. This is how it changes your life. And then here's the sacrament itself, and then here's the rite of the sacrament. So by going through that, they see how the individual rites are tied to theological concepts and to civilization as a whole, right? That's at least that's my goal. Whether or not I nail it, it's a different story. So the big picture for them is to understand the primacy of the family and the church's thinking on the primacy of the family. And how the Catholic Church has never wavered on asserting that marriage is for the procreation and education of children and for the good of the spouses. And the moment we take our eyes off of that is the moment you could turn to the part in the morality section on the offenses against chastity. Usually marriage problems go south because there's a communication disconnect between husband and wife. Either they're on two different pages, emotionally, mentally, with the kids, whatever it might be, and those things never get expressed, and then becomes conflict. All this stuff happens, but it usually gets expressed through physical means, because marriage is such a physical sacrament, right? So you look at the sexual relationship, you look at just intimacy and romance within marriage, you look at how they spend free time when they're together. And what you find for a lot of struggling marriages is the priority becomes the kid, not the relationship, right? Yeah. And spouses grow further and further apart. The more kids they have, if they aren't cognizant of this, the quicker they grow apart. And so the idea is of constantly regrounding, like preparing the spouses for like, yeah, you're going to have kids, probably. And your kids are going to demand so much from you that it is easy to lose sight of one another in the shuffle. But always put the marriage and the good of, like, your kids need a good marriage, right? That's what they need. Right. So
that's the most important thing you give them.
Yes. Right. And so you keep thinking, oh, parent in America, that what the kids need is Johnny needs to go to soccer practice and Sally needs to have piano lessons. And you need to go in 400 different directions all the time because you want to give your kids opportunities. But the stability in the home, And honest, like, time with mom and dad and time with relatives and neighbors that are on the same page as you with your faith, that is actually what they need. All this other stuff is just nice add-ons.
Yeah, okay, so not that you needed clarification for that. That was very clear and good. But when you said, you know, the more kids they have, the more this problem is exposed, right?
It can be, yeah.
Exactly, and I think what's important to understand is, like, what you're saying is marriage is hard, right? Like, the idea of two people like coming together and like living their life together and having children and raising children and all these things, it's a difficult thing no matter how on board you are with each other, no matter how good it is. So of course, like, the more kids you have, the more stakes are at hand, right? And so, yeah, of course, if there's a problem in the foundation, the greater the stakes, the greater the problem here. So I think it's important to understand that there's that stress there. But it's also like kind of like gambling, right? In the sense that, like, the more stakes, the better, right? Like, because if you get it right, like, you're creating a community of people traveling to heaven together, you know? And that's what this is all about, is like, what, you know, every day asking yourself, like, is that what we're doing? Are we creating a community of people just traveling to heaven together? I think it's really difficult now in our culture, because we don't even really know what normal is with marriage, right? I mean, that's a big problem for a lot of people coming to the church to ask for convalidation or for marriage, is we don't really know what normal is. And in fact, when I talk to priests, a big part of their marriage prep or a big part of their checking up on someone is to understand, do you even understand what marriage, the concept actually is, like what it is? Because we use all of these inadequate words or metaphors or whatever to describe it, like partnership or something like that. And it's just, it's a sacrament. It's not, we're not able to just use human language to describe what we're after in this.
Yeah.
Right? It's a covenant.
Yeah. And so I love talking about this with the church's understanding in terms of like, where does the sacrament of marriage come from? A lot of Catholics don't understand this, that holy matrimony originates in nature, right? So this is why the Catholic Church intervenes when it came to like gay marriage debate and whatnot in our society. And it doesn't, you know, unilaterally intervene in a lot of stuff. You know, there's a lot of freedom. You could debate the social welfare state and how does that correlate with Christian charity and taking care of the poor. And you can have a wide range of opinions. But when it comes to marriage, with
someone else,
huh?
Debate that with someone else, not me.
Yeah. It's Dave.
Go ahead. Moving on.
But when you talk about holy matrimony, the church adheres to the idea that it is a part of the natural law, that man and woman, male and female, he created them. And that, you know, the kind of theological underpinnings of our thoughts on this is Adam and Eve. Adam awoke and he was married to Eve. It is known as the primordial sacrament. And so it is a part of human nature. And you find it in almost every society. You find the notions of the bonds of exclusion in almost every society. And while you have aberrations and you also have abuses, and often women suffered disproportionately in these things, you have the creation or the understanding that marriage is primarily for procreation. If you start with that mentality, that marriage is primarily for procreation, you can think along the lines of the church for almost everything else. But if you start with the fact that marriage is meant to be the emotional support within a domestic relationship, right, whether it's romantic or whatever, then you can actually go down all sorts of wrong paths, right? So what we have done today, and I'm not saying, well, what really needs to happen is we just need to have arranged marriages. Like, that's not what I'm saying. But a lot of people will be like, oh, so you want the olden days where women were nothing but pregnant and, you know, and it was all about like, you know, having a firstborn son and all that stuff. No, but the idea within our culture is that the purpose of marriage is to have kids. If you don't want to have kids, don't get married. Yeah. Right. And so, because what you're doing is you're forming the type of bond that is a stable and holy environment in which to raise kids. So in the Catholic Church, two atheists getting married at the Justice of the Peace, unbaptized souls, they're considered married in the eyes of the church. Now, it's not a sacramental marriage.
Right.
So when they become Catholic at Easter Vigil, their natural marriage is automatically, the moment the baptismal waters, you know, run off their forehead, they are considered sacramentally married, right? You don't have to do anything extra. Same with Protestants. You don't have to do anything extra if those Protestants weren't baptized.
Right, because a major part of the sacrament is the connubial union or the sex, sorry.
Yeah, it's the mutual giving of each other. You know, that's why we call it the marital act and all this stuff. It's because it is meant to be the mutual giving of an entire life. Right? Not the mutual giving of just, you know, access to genitalia, right? And so, which is,
by the way, this is where, like, I think a lot of the people who come to me, like, if there's marriage problems, like, when they feel, like, if a woman feels used or if the man feels used in sex, it's always like, well, how are you giving yourself to them outside of that place, right? And they don't understand it. They don't realize that it's a sign of that.
And also and I'm going to speak very generally here. This does not apply to everyone. Just please, disclaimer.
But, we always get so many emails about marriage.
I know. Yeah. I always feel it's like hard. I have to issue.
It's hard.
I always feel like I have to issue disclaimers. And I just feel like, can't we just be adults and be like, oh, yeah, well, that's not me. So I'm an exception to that.
Yeah.
But no, people, like, I gave a talk one time where I was talking about moms and dads. And the guy made a beeline up to me. It's like, I was abandoned by my father. I was only raised by my mother. My mother had to do it. And I was like, yeah, okay. Like, can't you just, so it infuriates me when everyone's like, but I'm the exception. And you're like, okay, I get it. You're an adult. Just make the shift mentally in your head.
We get it.
So the idea of, so here's the general statement that might upset some people, but I've found it more often than not to be true, which is this. Men often, the husbands often express love through sexual intimacy. That is the union, the emotion, the physicality, the pleasure is for men an expression of love to their spouses. Whereas often the wives want to receive an expression of love before they engage in sexual intercourse. That it often becomes not the root, but the fruit of love, an experience of love. So, you know, the kind of the glib way you put it is men use love in order to get sex. Women use sex in order to get love. But the reality is, right, but when you think about this, right, like the reality is if that emotional safety that so many women crave, that connection, that reciprocity that they want needs to come first, then it's the man's job to serve and to love in that regard. And for the woman, this is the part that our culture absolutely despises and I think is absolutely stupid. But for the woman to understand that for the man, the sexual act is often the doorway to giving emotional love and all this stuff for many men, right? So that because we, you know, for whatever
but I think it's disordered. Like, let's say that.
See, this is where I disagree. So the received wisdom is like, yes, you need to love them and you need to show that you love them and you need to demonstrate that. But oftentimes for men, sex is an expression of love. It's the beginning steps, especially for guys who aren't very communicative, very stoic. So please push
just
back.
No, I'm not going to push back. I think you're probably right about this. Cause again, marriage is not my topic, but this is just another example of how I do not relate well to men. Because like when I think about what I miss from marriage, yeah, I mean, I'm a man, I'm a human, like sex is one thing, but like I desperately miss wooing someone.
Yeah.
Pursuing. I desperately miss that, you know, like, and I was overboard. I mean, I'm like ridiculous. I feel like I constantly think I'm living in a novel or something like that, but
you're on The Notebook Part 2.
No, ew. Oh my, that's the novel you picked for me. Are you
cried
kidding?
When you watched it the first time.
I never saw that movie, but anyways, I'm just saying like that it's interesting that you say that. So you don't feel it's disordered. So there's something innate. Yeah. I mean, I get it. Like there are certain things that are inside of us and I guess that's where the marital debt comes from.
That's
like,
exactly where it comes from.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. Because men and women often, and this is the genius of St. Thomas Aquinas, right? So the genius of St. Thomas Aquinas, when he writes about the marital debt in the Summa Theologica, he always puts it in the feminine. Like, so if a woman would like to have sexual, but so just to help people frame this, the understanding that you as a couple have different levels and desires of feeling loved and of giving and receiving love. So five love languages, all that stuff. Of giving and receiving love. For many people in the spousal relationships, part of that conflict is how they relate to sex and that expression of marital intimacy. And it becomes for many people a source of conflict. So if a husband or a wife desire sex more than the other person, so usually what happens is that person is usually demonized for whatever reason because the other person then feels used. So, because there's no safety there, there's no that emotional connection to that receiving partner doesn't feel like it's there, right? So the idea is to meet in the middle for both, right? To not just disregard the needs of one and say, well, you're just carnal, you crave this stuff. Because for a lot of people, that is how they show love. Men and women both tends to be more men is one of the ways maritally that they show love. And I actually worked with a couple and the guy said, you know, why do I treat my wife so poorly when it comes to sexuality? And he like never wanted to touch her. And I was like, because you love her, you never loved all the women before her. He was kind of a player. And I said, you never loved the women before them. And so you want to treat her differently. But she also... She was the one who was demanding more because she's you don't love me because you won't give yourself entirely to me.
So he like developed a situation where he felt like sex was almost dirty or something like that. That's interesting.
Because used women all the time this way and I don't want to do that to my wife. Yeah.
You've won me over because let me give you the opposite of that.
Okay.
Okay. You know, I was, you know, after Amber passed away, you know, I was dating someone for a while. I mean, you know this, but no one else knows this, but,
so we're making this known that you did for a period of time. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't care.
Okay.
I mean, people, every time I go out to dinner in Pittsburgh, there's people there who, you know, it's like, so anyways, people knew, but I felt like, you know, my heartbreak, a big part of that was relieved by just the pursuit of someone.
Yeah.
Like the romance. And I remember like thinking like, why am I not more interested in that, that the sexual aspect? Like, why is that not like something I'm pursuing? Whereas like when I was younger, right? I mean, that's a, you fight that. You fight that pursuit constantly.
Yeah.
And I think like, wow.
Lord, why do you make this so difficult?
Right, right. I was thinking like, well, yeah, like that would be disordered too. Like I always think that. Like it would be so weird to have like this amazing romantic relationship and then never express it physically, just as it would be so weird to have this amazing physical relationship and never express it romantically.
Yeah.
Or like communicate, whatever you want to say. Like, yeah. Okay. And that is, so I think you're, okay, you're right. I'm not going to push back anymore because I think you're right. Because I see that play out in my, I've seen that play out in my own life like that. Yeah. I was surprised at how much that fulfilled me, just like the pursuit, right? You know, that kind of thing. So
yeah. And so the realization, so the reason why I bring this up is because marriage as a sacrament is an act of service to the one that you love. This is why the five love languages, I think, is such a great contribution to understanding marriage, because basically what the five love languages gets people to do is to just say, oh, I show love in one way. Maybe it's the same, maybe it's different, but I receive love in a different way. Maybe my partner does too. I had a guy who pushed back. He was visibly shaking mad in a marriage prep course. And he said, if I show love this way, my wife should just accept it. And I was like, and he goes, that's prideful of her to demand anything different of me. And I said, buddy, that's like, you meet a Russian bride and you I was trying to say like you're speaking two different languages, right? And it's like,
right,
you can only have communication when you're in the mode of the receiver,
right?
Right. When God communicates himself to us, he has to condescend to our level. And so it's like, dude, you have to serve her by loving her the way that she wants to be loved. And he's like, no,
that's ridiculous.
She needs to serve me and I will serve her by letting her love me the way she wants and letting, and it's like, no.
Oh, that, yeah. But what if it's not what you,
yeah.
Yeah. Good luck.
I was like, good. Then you will live in resentment. And he's like, maybe I will, maybe I won't.
Like, well, since you threw it out there, let's hear it. What are your love languages?
What is my love language? Golly.
I just want to know for our relationship. It's really important.
Yeah. Yeah. no, it is. I'm pretty sure my love language is words of affirmation.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Really, I would have already said that.
And then the way I show love is quality time. I'm a quality time guy.
Okay.
I just love spending time with Shannon. And I love when Shannon is just, in fact, we relived the story when for my birthday, she had a friend at Notre Dame and take After Virtue, written by Alistair McIntyre, buy a new copy, go to him and get him to autograph it. And in order to do that, Shannon wanted a personalized autograph message for my birthday. And it was my golden birthday, maybe. I can't remember. And so she called me up one day and she said, so what is your obsession with Alistair McIntyre? Why do you like him so much? And she was taking notes on her phone call so that she could get that turned into a like personalized message. And we were just talking about this last night. I was so excited that she wanted to learn about Alistair McIntyre. This is something I have to keep so bundled in. And so I'm going off for like 30 minutes. And when we hung up the phone, I was like, gosh, I love this one. I can't wait to marry her.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
yeah.
And she was just doing it for a gift. She didn't care.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. That's a mode. What about that's you? What's your love language, bro?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I don't think I ever actually read the book, actually, to be honest with you. I show love. The gifts are a big thing for me.
Okay.
Gifts. Yeah.
That's my mom. That's a big thing. My mom is a gift giver and a gift receiver.
Yeah.
And so if you don't do the gift, if she doesn't receive a gift, but no one in my family are gift givers.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. Wow. Yeah. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm like when I'm pursuing someone's like a lot of flowers, a lot of gifts.
I have never received flowers from you. I just want to say for the record.
No, well, the thing is that, I know what your love language is, so I need to communicate to you in that.
Please do.
But when people get into the love languages, it's as annoying as when people got into Wild Heart. So,
yeah. Hey, listen, we all have an adventure to live, a beauty to rescue, and a battle to fight. How dare you? Yeah, so I love this stuff. I love talking about some of these practicals. And I do a five love languages thing, like an inventory. Like, what do you think about this
you
stuff?
Do? You do? So
in
when
my
you
marriage,
marriage
for every one of my marriage
Wow.
Preps.
Okay, wow.
Because
okay.
Not, and I don't do an in-depth thing. Like, you can do five love languages as a weekend, like, retreat. We have couples at my old church that used to do that. But I just bring it through. I give them one paragraph summaries of what they are. And I give them, you know, the intro understanding of giving and receiving and how that's different and how you need to be attentive to your spouse's way of receiving. Because what ends up happening is we only give from the mode that we think of. And then when other people are communicating love, we don't feel it. And so it kind of falls on deaf ears, right?
So let me tell you where I think it falls short, though.
Okay. Please do.
I think, and it's going to continue to fall even more and more short as we move on as a culture, is the woundedness. Woundedness distorts the gift.
Yo, yo.
You know, it distorts giving. And so, like, I think people, like, they have to understand that there's a fluidity, right? Like, that there are some people who, like, well, no, I only receive it through physical touch. And then it's like, well, no, it's because you've perverted physical touch and you need that desperately. And so that's how you survive.
Yeah. And I would say a huge component, and this is where we bring it back to the sacramental reality, a huge component of marriage is overcoming concupiscence. One way of talking about that, St. Paul says, it is better for you to marry rather than burn, right? And and a lot of people, that's kind of difficult. Oh, so you're saying the only reason why a man should marry a woman is because he's lusty and he needs to get that. It's like, no, it well and truly is a remedy for concupiscence. My selfishness, my arrogance, my pride. You have kids. You learn. I didn't think ever I was an impatient or angry person until I had kids and it came time to clean up the playroom. And all of a sudden my rage and anger came out and I'm like, why am I so mad? And it's like, well, it's their fault. But no, it's not. Like, I'm mad because that stuff is within me that's never been dealt, addressed, confronted. And so marriage is truly a crucible in the service of the people that you love. When you cease to serve them, the marriage can become the most selfish enterprise, self-serving, self-aggrandizing. You know,
and
so
it's horrible for these people. It's terrible. It's the worst loneliness. I am sick to my stomach when I get emails about people who are in serious marriage problems because it's worse than being alone.
Yeah.
You know, being alone in a marriage is way worse than being alone outside of marriage.
So. Yeah. And so you have, in very real ways, the ache and the cry of the human heart that is rooted in nature, right? That is rooted in our humanity. And this is why Christ elevates it to a sacrament, the wedding feast of Cana, et cetera, that marriage becomes a way for a husband and a wife to bring their spouse to heaven, right? To make saints of us all. So the idea of the whole, and this is why I love talking about marriage so much. One, because theology of the body, I owe a lot to that framework that he gave us, that JP2 gave
right,
us.
Right,
love and responsibility, which is his prior philosophical work, helped answer a lot of questions for me in this regard. And so when I talk about, so what I do when I talk about marriage, I talk about the theology of the body. I go through the catechism references and I talk about the different types of love and love and responsibility, or the progression of love. In, I think it's called the ethical analysis of love. And it's brilliant. It's insightful, but it's so practical.
It is. That's the crazy thing about him.
Yeah. If you think you're in love, and so I talk about this with my teenage daughter. Many people call love what's really infatuation, right? It's that emotionally, like, you are good for me. I desire you. And within the realm of that, like, that's good and natural, but it needs to keep progressing to be love. But most people today, when we view marriage without the procreation and education of children, which means permanence and stability, when we ignore the procreation and education of children, and we only focus on the mutual good of the spouses, then what ends up happening is that mutual good gets defined down or reduced to infatuation. If you can keep the romantic feelings up, or you can keep, if I keep, and this is the selfishness, this is the distortion. If I feel loved by you, then nothing else matters. But at the same time, I'm not committed. I'm not becoming holy. You know, I become a black hole, as it were. And I'm just taking and taking and taking. And so for me, in progressing this, marriage is a beautiful remedy for concupiscence when the couple can speak honestly to one another, are coming from the same place as much as possible in their faith, which, you know, there's a lot of unequally yoked situations,
sure,
which
sure.
the Bible addresses. You know, it is very difficult, but it can lead to the salvation of your spouse through that. But the idea is being on the same wavelength means that you can address the problems, the issues, because truly people who truly love each other can do that, can go through that. They can suffer, they can be patient, but they can also communicate difficult things to one another so that they keep being the spouses that they need to be, this mutual covenant that they've made with one another.
It's a gift God gave us, and how we respond to that gift is by serving him completely and totally. When we serve our spouse, when we serve our children, we're serving the Lord, and it is a unbelievable wellspring of grace that can go bad so quickly.
Yeah. All right, yo, we're going to take a quick break, and when we do, I just want to remind everyone to go get the Ascension app. The Ascension app is baller, shock collar, 20-inch blades on the Impaler.
I love that you just said that. It makes me so happy.
Well, you are an MC. So get the Ascension Press app. I'm telling you, me and my wife use it every morning when we pray together with Father Mike Schmitz and the Bible in a Year. We're going through that. It's been awesome for us to go through this. So there's tons. It's building up to be the best Bible app in English. It's incredible. All these Bible studies, you get the premier edition, you get all these Bible studies, the Bible in a Year. It's not just there, but you also get all the articles that are in the full Bible, the Great Adventure Bible. It's great. It's great. You totally need to get it. Catechism, all that good stuff. So get that Ascension Press app, and then we'll catch you on the other side of this break.
The Old Testament makes up over half of the Bible, and yet it can be very difficult to understand. I'm Andrew Swofford.
And I'm Jeff Cavins, and we, along with a couple of our fellow Bible scholars, wrote a Catholic Guide to the Old Testament just for that purpose.
Through a Catholic Guide to the Old Testament, you will become better acquainted with the author, main characters, important points of each book of the Old Testament to bring more clarity to the Old Testament.
And it even uses the color-coded Bible Timeline Learning System, which is also used for the Bible in a Year podcast with Father Mike Schmitz and myself.
And one great thing about this book is not only does it take you to the there and then, it also shows you how the New Testament uses each book of the Old Testament and how each book of the Old Testament is used in Catholic tradition.
Understanding each of the individual books of the Old Testament will help you possess a deeper knowledge of the Bible and a greater view of the big picture of God's plan of salvation, which ultimately brings you closer to God.
You can order today at ascensionpress.com/Old Testament.
And we're back. So the purpose for this episode is to kind of get us started thinking about marriage. We've done, you know, we did a Theology of the Body semester, so you can go back to the last season and listen to that. But what we wanted to do was kind of ground the humanity, the human side of marriage, starting out. Next week, what we're going to cover is the sacramental aspects, the deeper mystery of marriage. And then finally, we're going to do the spirituality of marriage. And that way, I think, is a good, solid mystagogia for everyone. So, Dave, what do you think? What kind of word?
I think we should do as an add-on, like a bonus episode.
Yeah.
An episode on Catholic dating. I'm serious. I think we should. I think it's a weird thing now.
Oh, it's such a weird thing. And you are required to not wear a fedora when you go on a date, if you're in your 30s or 20s. Okay, Catholic men, do you hear me? No fedoras allowed. No complicated vests and suspender combinations.
Yeah, attention-catching Fox listeners. I can pick them out of a crowd so quickly when they're at my talks.
All the neckbeards of the world unite.
Awesome.
It's beautiful. So, let's wrap up and talk. Give him some parting words, Dave. I'm putting it all in your shoulders.
Yeah. If you are married, then it's the source of grace in your life. It's how you're going to get to heaven. If you are unmarried and discerning, think of it as the possible greatest source of grace, and you should prepare everything for it. So that's it. That's all I can say.
And that's all we need to say. Y'all, God bless you. And we look forward to keep going. Bye.